Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. This past Tuesday, December 1st, 2020, was World AIDS Day 32. It is a reminder that while we are amidst a horrendously lethal and expanding coronavirus pandemic that has been killing several millions of human beings worldwide for nearly a year, a quarter million in the USA alone, it might be wise to remember that AIDS still rages among the human population with little sign of abating. But then HIV, aka human immunodeficiency virus, is an ancient plague reaching back perhaps 40,000 years and counting, which provokes a few simplistic ruminations that might seem sloppy historiography, but the subject is immensely complicated and tangled up with origins of life and species and unfortunate collisions among them from primeval times. As mentioned, AIDS is ancient, as are coronaviruses that just as noticeably cross over in all sorts of species at contact since biology first spored upon the planet. However mysterious its genesis, germs from some cosmic coitus or comet fertility gestated at sea and marooned ashore. Life is ferocious and deadly, and on the move from its first appearance, racing as though it meant extinction to catch up with itself. Nearly every bit of life is in opposition for survival and advantage, from slime mold to hungry puppies. God knows how many strains of life blinked out when life was new, fragile, and unsteady, not even counting the five massive die-offs of species that predated our own misdirection toward a near future sixth. The entire spectrum of earthly life contains mortal contagions up and down and all through the biological chain, encompassing all sorts of deathly probabilities, from the common cold to cancer, which includes eating each other. The human appetite has eliminated scores of species, which might account for much of crossover pathologies. The transference of disease between species in earliest times was most likely from killing and eating rather than through sex. Proto-humans and simian ancestors, evolving apart, yet mutually congested and ingesting each other, is a real possibility in wildlands they cohabited for multi-millennia. Philosophies define humanity and life in general through all manner of conjecture, but starkly erect a dichotomy between eaters and eaten, so to speak, which might also include an ethical span of life, disease, and diseased. AIDS, HIV, gestated over many millennia, originating most likely in Africa, the Congo specifically. A study published by the National Academy of Sciences in 2008 suggested that a strain of tree primates have been infected with ancestral AIDS-like viruses for at least 14 million years. And in 2010, researchers reported that simian immune deficiency syndrome, SIV, had infected monkeys in Bioko for at least 32,000 years. Scientists seem to think it will take a similar amount of time before humans adapt naturally to HIV transference from SIV-induced infections. Transmission from non-humans to early humans was likely from simian primates to so-called bushman hunters. Even as late as the last century, so-called big game hunters on safari in Africa ate infected chimpanzees, or chimp blood got into cuts or wounds of hunters. Think Donald Trump Jr. At any rate, the most recent transference of simian viruses to humans seems to have been from Africa to Haiti in the Caribbean during the 1960s. From there, it moved with human carriers in various migrations to New York City around 1970, then across the continent to San Francisco later that decade. Though HIV arrived in the USA apparently in the 1970s, it did not receive public attention until the 1980s, and then primarily among gay male populations on both coasts, which prompted the pejorative of AIDS as a gay disease, and it was called the gay plague. However, it also spread among gay women and heterosexual drug users through infected needles. AIDS swept across the USA and much of the world in the 1980s and early 1990s. More than 70 million people were infected by HIV, and about 35 million are recorded as having died from HIV/AIDS since the start of that pandemic, but that might only be an estimate. In November 1983, the World Health Organization of the United Nations held its first meetings to assess the global AIDS epidemic. 5 years later, WHO declared December 1st, 1988, as the first World AIDS Day. And now, something I wrote on the same subject with tainted smell of politics added, which I have read on this program before and initially wrote for the Born Again Bird, also known as the North Coast Times. I call it Petition of Prejudice. And the debate about whether sexual orientation should be included in Oregon civil rights laws is ultimately a debate about what principles society should be founded upon. It is a struggle to define the social contract that citizens make with one another to live under one government. And that was written by Catherine Bridget Snow, whose birthday was yesterday, and she was KMUN's second program director. Homophobia, like alcoholism, is a disease, a psychotic obsession to enforce a mythical moral and sexual purity through ostracism, oppression, and violence to the point of murder and genocide. Gay men and lesbians, however they might be called in succeeding eras or separate cultures, are as historical a part of humanity as heterosexuality. Humanity is probably of a bisexual inclination, able to find its pleasure with either or both sexes. Many early cultures were not disturbed by the sexual preferences of their citizens, so long as each generation replicated itself in adequate populations to continue the tribe or society. Other early societies developed traditions of severe sexual conditioning, however, which spread pervasively more by sword and fire than by reason or logic. Sexual tolerance in most areas of the world was supplanted by rigid definitions of acceptable sexual practices, which were exclusively heterosexual. Religion is, of course, a doctrinaire force in matters of sexual subversion, the oppressive arbiter of public morality, rabidly averse to homosexuality. Christianity in medieval times burned homosexuals by the hundreds of thousands, buried at the bottom of stakes among the faggots of wood that would ignite heretics and women accused of witchcraft, which is the origin of the term faggot to describe gay men. Homosexuals have long been forced to lead shadow lives, and much to the contrary of popular fear, it is they who are preyed upon, who have for centuries been open game for anyone to ostracize or harm. Coming out of the closet most likely meant dropping into a casket. While heterosexual debauch has generally been tolerated among successful armies and in aristocratic practices of incest and rape of peasant girls, homosexuality has been shunned and homosexuals hunted, tortured, and executed. Gay bashing is old. AIDS is new. While thousands of young men died of the epidemic, ecclesiastical homophobes declared their deaths as punishment for offending God with their unnatural acts. The death toll has been staggering. These lines from a poem by George Meredith provide a collective epitaph. And we go, and we drop like the fruits of the tree, even we, even so. The extreme prejudice of a conservative government felt little concern for AIDS until heterosexuals started falling like the fruits. The government's apathy during the Reagan-Bush years could be likened to genocide in a different form than gas chambers in death camps. The attitude was to let the gays die, and the medical profession, though it has since reacted heroically in its fight against AIDS, initially balked and disgraced its Hippocratic oath. Children with AIDS were dismissed from schools, and neighbors pressed their families to leave town. A part of the reluctance to marshal Red Cross-type epidemic relief during the 1980s was not only a demonstration of prevalent public revulsion for homosexuality, but also a barely concealed gloating that the immense strides made by gay liberation in the previous decade were literally wiped out by the death toll among its strongest adherents. AIDS at first promised to be a sort of final solution to the rise of gay influence in the United States. Only when white heterosexuals from the burbs began to contract AIDS did the government belatedly creak into action. Though AIDS has taken a staggering toll among the male gay community, which is in the aggregate as promiscuous among its members as other men are with women, and less among lesbians, it has failed as a final solution to eradicate their determination to be as free and equal citizens as their tormentors. So ancient methods of exclusion and repression are once more revived to inculcate fear and revulsion in both gays and straights, to intensify their mutual antipathy, and to ultimately pacify the public to the process of eliminating homosexuals, both legally and extra-legally. A Portland white supremacist who represented an organization he described as the moderate force of fascism told the newspaper a few years ago that homosexuals will either be corrected by Skinnerism behavior modification or it's the bullet. The Oregon Citizens Alliance was formed to disenfranchise gay men and lesbians in Oregon, to strip them of all rights as citizens and as human beings entitled to the most basic protections of democracy. The process chosen by OCA, in alliance with the so-called Christian Coalition, was the initiative petition, which gives the public the opportunity to oust crooked politicians or change bad laws, but which can also be an instrument to discriminate against troublesome or disaffected minorities. In the 2000 election, the attempt was to eliminate any support or positive mention of sexual minorities in public schools. Titled the Student Protection Act, this initiative called for banning public school instruction encouraging, promoting, and sanctioning homosexual, bisexual behaviors, quote unquote, as well as making the contradictory assertion that teaching about sexual orientation is divisive to society. Previous OCA-sponsored statewide initiatives attempted to amend the Oregon Constitution to declare homosexuality abnormal and unnatural, quote unquote, and required state and local governments to not promote, condone, encourage, or facilitate abnormal behavior. And that's a quote. OCA spokespersons denied they were setting up gays for extra-legal persecution, yet claimed homosexuality defiles the eyes of God and threatens children who are, they said, exposed to perversion as long as gays dwell openly in society. They declared their petition was for child protection and said homosexuals should not be given special privileges or be protected by laws. In 2000, the OCA dropped some of the earlier controversial provisions from its original ballot measure of 1992 that lumped bestiality, sadomasochism, pedophilia, and incest with homosexuality, which Damon Edwards, co-founder of the Clatsop County AIDS Coalition, wrote in an article that appeared in the August 1991 North Coast Times Eagle, Stop the Witch Hunt, quote, cunningly lumped homosexuality in the middle of all these activities, unquote. Edwards asked, do they, OCA, really think homosexuals belong in this group? Don't they realize there are straight people out there who partake in these activities every day? And don't they know the vast majority of gay people think these actions are just as disgusting? What the OCA won't tell you, Edwards wrote, is that the vast majority of child molesters and rapists are heterosexual, not homosexual. The OCA, he said, seemed to think that a heterosexual molester is somehow not as evil or perverted as a gay one. Tell it to the thousands of little girls who are ravaged and raped by heterosexuals each year, Damon Edwards said. The Oregon Citizens Alliance was started in 1987 as a backlash against Governor Neil Goldschmidt's order that state workers who were gay should enjoy the same protection and rights of all citizens. OCA claimed gays were a special interest group being accorded privileges greater than the rest of the citizenry. And although the simple justice of the governor's position should have been evident, enough people accepted the patent absurdity and fear-mongery of OCA to defeat Goldschmidt's reform. Within 2 months, the OCA gathered nearly double the signatures needed to get their anti-gay initiative on the 1988 state ballot. The measure successfully rescinded the governor's executive order that banned discrimination based on sexual preference in public employment, but was struck down by the Oregon Supreme Court in 1993. The OCA was immersed in ultra-conservative issues besides its assaults on gays. In 1987, it opposed legislation for pre-kindergarten programs on the grounds that they were anti-family. OCA opposed parental leave, which they claimed was anti-business, and fought state divestment from South Africa. Some other OCA activities included organizing the Homefront Coalition in support of the Persian Gulf War, involvement with right-wing women's groups that attempted to undermine the feminist movement, support of prayer in public schools, and the OCA rapidly attacked the reproductive rights movement. The OCA mounted several local anti-gay campaigns in cities and counties in Oregon, though the state Supreme Court ruled them unconstitutional and discriminatory. In 1992, the OCA's infamous Abnormal Behaviors Initiative, then Measure 9, was defeated in Oregon, though a Colorado version passed and was subsequently ruled unconstitutional. The OCA publicly backed off from its bestiality stance in 1994 in hopes of attracting moderate bigots to its rank and file of radical homophobes who were not enough in number to swing the 1992 vote. Despite toning down the measure, 13, it was decisively defeated. OCA attempts to grassroots their prejudice at local levels were collectively known as Son of Nine. Despite its losses, court reversals, and rejection by mainstream politicians, the OCA remained a dangerous spoiler, not only to moderate Republicans and liberal Democrats, but especially to gays and lesbians who openly struggled for a generation to overcome prejudice and be allowed to at least live in peace. The OCA believed it could eliminate a subculture its homophobe members detested through sanctioned government suppression with support of a majority of the citizenry, perhaps initially more subtle than Adolf Hitler's attempt to exterminate a large menu of society's misfits, quote-unquote, most prominently the children of Judah and including homosexuals. Yet parallels are relevant and possible. Hitler began his suppression of German Jewry by first isolating them as an undesirable subgroup, then by ordinances forbidding them this or that, until sure of his power and success of his campaign of ostracism, he stripped Jews of citizenship and declared open violence upon them. The OCA demanded homosexuals not receive special rights. But when, Damon Edwards asked, did equality become a special right for Americans? We live in a country that gives men medals for killing other men in war, yet shun them for loving one in a time of peace. The right of the people to live in a manner of their own choice is a crucial tenet of democracy and of constitutional law. We don't have to like or even approve of our neighbors, but neither we nor they have the right to trample on or deny the individual rights and liberties of each other, which also protects virulent anti-gay organizations such as the OCA that attempt to use the law to undermine all it stands for. The cold, hard fact of the matter is that the OCA doesn't like the power and influence that gay groups wield in this state, Damon Edwards wrote. They just do not like the fact that pro-homosexuals are in power in high places across Oregon. The OCA was a direct heir to the caverns of the Ku Klux Klan that were greatly popular in Oregon during the 1920s. Homosexuals were deep in the closet and escaped most of the KKK's wrath. This was focused on Jews, Catholics, and aliens, with little activity against blacks because they were fewer in Oregon than furtive or fugitive gays. The Klan's political clout was instrumental in passing the bill, which prohibited Chinese and Japanese immigrants from owning land in the state. A cartoon of a few years ago commented on an earlier controversy about homosexuals teaching in schools. The cartoon shows a child staring at Leonardo da Vinci, Socrates, and Plato, who sit on a park bench reading newspaper want ads. This might well be an imminent portrait of the loss of remarkable minds and talents the OCA demanded be removed from open society and revoked of their rights as citizens. AIDS has deficited much of the nation's cultural treasury by killing many of its most gifted writers, actors, dancers, musicians, and artists. The OCA's draconian mandates would have removed from Oregon the remaining best and brightest who practice sexual freedom from the most basic protections of civilization. We must scrupulously guard the civil rights and civil liberties of all citizens, whatever their background, Franklin Delano Roosevelt said. We must remember that any oppression, any injustice, any hatred is a wedge designed to attack our civilization. And that was FDR. And now, by Dr. Robert Drake, my not-so-fond farewell to Trump. In just 48 days, we can bid a not-so-fond farewell to Donald Trump, a man who belongs not in the White House, but in a prison psych ward. There is his incompetence and malevolence vis-a-vis the coronavirus, his encouragement of the unhinged, anti-Semitic, and possibly terrorist QAnon, his racism, his sexism, his history as an alleged sexual predator and likely rapist, his horrible foreign policy, his corrupt self-dealing business ventures, his attacks on our healthcare system and the environment, his extremist court picks, his tax cheating, his promotion of fascist violence against peaceful protesters, his paranoia, his fealty to Vladimir Putin, his nepotism, his ignorance, his vulgarity, his cruelty, his narcissism, and his childishness. That list isn't even close to exhaustive. One catalog I've checked enumerates 940 of Trump's worst cruelties, collusions, corruptions, and crimes. Like all decent voters, I valued the Biden victory, realizing that we must grapple sooner rather than later with the heart of darkness in this country that has inspired tens of millions of fellow citizens to support this short-fingered vulgarian and evil miscreant. Shortly after his inauguration, Trump repeated his nonsensical claim about allegedly illegal votes cast for his opponent. Reporters wore out their thesauruses looking for a way to report his ridiculous lie without using the word lie. As an alleged money laundering, tax cheating, fraud executing rapist, Trump must have been aware that if he lost re-election, he could end up behind bars. Trump has enlisted much of his cabinet, the judiciary, the Republican Party, and the conservative media in his quest to destroy our democracy. But 48 days from now, Trump may have to face the prospect of incarceration in a prison psych ward. I'm so looking forward to that prospect. And that was by Dr. Robert Drake, my not-so-fond farewell to Trump. And this is Michael McCusker. Engineer for this program is Dylan Hauser-Schalk. this past Monday, November 30th, would have been the 185th birthday of America's most memorable and cherished writer, Samuel Langhorne Clemens, known to the world as Mark Twain, nautical parlance for waters deep and clear. He said he was born with Halley's Comet and would die when it returned, and he did, 1835 to 1910. Two friends of mine have recently died. Both lived in Astoria. One of them was among my earliest friends in Oregon, whom I have known more than half a century, Jim Wilkins. He was a big man in size and stature and possessed many hats, and among many other attributes, was a KMUN pioneer. He was especially a fine and robust musician, primarily strings, with jazz, rock, and folk, and played with groups, sometimes his own, from San Francisco to Portland to Astoria, and venues all around the urban and ecotopian Northwest. My most impressionable memory of him was early on when I first recognized his virtuosity with a 12-string guitar. A notable guitarist was visiting Portland for a gig, and I was a guest at a party of friends in his honor. I heard a magnificent 12-string strumming and noticed the guest of honor among fans. He was not playing. I walked around a corner of the room and saw Jim Wilkins sitting in a chair, alone and playing solo, the best guitar I have heard. Of all the memories I have from half a century knowing Jim Wilkins, that is the one that comes first to mind. And Carlos Anaya has also died. He was a longtime pressman at the Daily Astorian and assisted printing my odd little newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle, for several years until it became a casualty of digital technology. He often urged me to computerize my rag, but I desisted, claiming I would wait for holographic reproduction. Carlos was a casualty of the coronavirus plague. Friends think he might be Clatsop County's first fatality from the pandemic, which has killed more than 250,000 Americans thus far. A sorrowful distinction, if true, which leaves his many friends in a paradoxical position of hoping he is the only one. We are all of us caught up in a war. All around us, people sicken and die. Each of us suspects we might be among the casualties before the war ends, or people we love. So, hearken to the bell that tolls. Protecting yourself in this dire time of deadly plague helps protect family, friends, and kindred spirits.
Did.